Chelan? Adolin asked. A palanquin sounds great, Vale said. Thanks. Adolin blushed, then nodded and strode toward one of the stairwells down into the city. Pattern said. I'm confused. We need to approach this from a logical position, Radiant said. We've been dancing around a decision for months, ever since those days we spent in the chasms with Stormblessed. I've begun to consider that a relationship between two knights Radiant is likely to accomplish a more equitable union. Also, Vale added, look at those eyes, simmering with barely bridled emotion. She walked toward him, grinning, then slowed. Adolin knows me. What was she doing? She shoved Radiant and Vale aside, and when they resisted, she stuffed them into the back part of her brain. They were not her. She was occasionally them. But they were not her. Kaladin hesitated on the wall walk, but Shallan just gave him a wave, then went the other way. Tired, but determined. Venli stood by the railing of a fleeing ship. The fused boasted from within the captain's cabin. They talked about the next time, promising what they'd do and how they'd win. They spoke of past victories and subtly hinted at why they'd failed. Too few of them had awakened so far, and those who had awakened were unaccustomed to having physical bodies. What a strange way to treat a failure. She attuned appreciation anyway. An old rhythm. She loved being able to hear those again at will. She could attune either old or new, and could make her eyes red, except when she drew in stormlight. Timber had granted this by capturing the void spren within her. This meant she could hide it from the fused. From odium. She stepped away from the cabin door and walked along the side of the ship, which surged through the water, heading back toward Marat. This bond was supposed to be impossible, she whispered to Timber. Timber pulsed to peace. I'm happy too, Venli whispered. But why me? Why not one of the humans? Timber pulsed to irritation, then the lost. That many? I had no idea the human betrayal had cost so many of your people's lives. And your own grandfather? Irritation again. I'm not sure how much I trust the humans either. Esh and I did, though. Nearby, sailors worked on the rigging, speaking softly in Thalen. Parshmen, yes, but also Thalens.
I don't know, Vulgen, one said. Yeah, some of them weren't so bad, but what they did to us... Does that mean we have to kill them?
His companion asked. She caught a tossed rope.
It doesn't seem right. They took our culture, Vulgen, the Malan said. They blustering took our entire identity. And they'll never let a bunch of parshmen remain free. Watch, they'll come for us.
They'll fight if they do, Vulgen said, but... I don't know. Can't we simply enjoy being able to think? Being able to exist?
She shook her head, lashing a rope tight.
I just wish I knew who we were.
Timber pulsed to praise.
The listeners? Venli whispered to the Spren. We didn't do that good a job of resisting Odium. As soon as we got a hint of power, we came running back to him.
That had been her fault. She had driven them toward new information, new powers. She'd always hungered for it. Something new. Timber pulsed to consolation, but then it blended, changing once again to resolve. Venli hummed the same transformation. Something new, but also something old. She walked to the two sailors. They immediately stood at attention, saluting her as the only regal on the ship,
holding a form of power.
"I know who you were," she said to the two of them. You do?"
the femalean asked.
"Yes," Venli pointed. "Keep working, and let me tell you of the listeners."
"I think you did a great job, Zeth,"
the sword said from Zeth's hand as they rose above Thalen City.
"You didn't destroy many of them, yes, but you just need some more practice."
"Thank you, Sword Nimi," he said, reaching Nin.
The herald floated with toes pointed downward, hands clasped behind his back, watching the disappearing ships of the Parshmen in the distance.
"I am sorry, Master," Zeth finally said. "I have angered you." "I am not your master," Nin said, "and you have not angered me. Why would I be displeased? You have determined that the Parshmen are the true owners of this land, and that the Skybreakers should follow their laws. The very reason that we swear to something external is because we acknowledge that our own judgment is flawed. My judgment is flawed." He narrowed his eyes. "I used to be able to feel Zeth Sun Naturo. I used to have compassion. I can remember those days before." "The torture?" Zeth asked. He nodded. "Centuries spent on Braze, the place you call damnation, stole my ability to feel. We each cope somehow, but only Ishar survived with his mind intact. Regardless, you are certain you wish to follow a man with your oath?" "It is not as perfect as the law, I know," Zeth said, "but it feels right." "The law is made by men, so it is not perfect either. It is not perfection we seek, for perfection is impossible. It is instead consistency. You have said the words, not yet. I swear to follow the will of Dalinar Kholin. This is my oath."
At the words, snow crystallized around him in the air, then fluttered down. He felt a surge of something. Approval? From the hidden Spren, who only rarely showed itself to him, even still.
"I believe that your words have been accepted. Have you chosen your quest for the next ideal?" "I will cleanse the Shin of their false leaders so long as Dalinar Kholin agrees." "We shall see. You may find him a harsh master." "He is a good man, Nin, Sun God." "That is precisely why."
Nin saluted him quietly, then began to move away through the air. He shook his head when Zeth followed, and then he pointed.
"You must protect the man you once tried to kill, Zeth Sun Naturo. What if we meet on the battlefield? Then we will both fight with confidence, knowing that we obey the precepts of our oaths. Farewell, Zeth Sun Naturo. I will visit you again to oversee your training in our second art, the Surge of Division. You may access that now, but take care. It is dangerous."
He left Zeth alone in the sky, holding a sword that hummed happily to itself, then confided that it had never really liked Nin in the first place.
Shallan had found that no matter how bad things got, someone would be making tea. Today it was Teshuv, and Shallan gratefully took a cup, then peeked through the command post at the top of the city, still looking for Adolin. Now that she was moving, she found she could ignore her fatigue. Momentum could be a powerful thing. Adolin wasn't here, though one of the runner girls had seen him a short time ago, so Shallan was on the right track. She walked back to the main thoroughfare, passing men carrying stretchers full of the wounded. Otherwise, the streets were mostly empty. People had been sent to storm shelters or homes as Queen Fenn's soldiers gathered gemstones from the reserve, rounded up Amaram's troops, and made certain there was no looting. Shallan idled in the mouth of an alleyway. The tea was bitter, but good. Knowing Teshev, it probably had something in it to keep her on her feet and alert. Scribes always knew the best teas for that. She watched the people for a time, then glanced upward as Kaladin landed on a rooftop nearby. He was next up for working the Oath Gate, taking over from Renarin. The Windrunner stood like a sentinel, surveying the city. Was that going to become a thing for him? Always standing around up high somewhere? She'd seen how envious he'd been as he'd watched those fused, with their flowing robes, moving like the winds. Shallan glanced toward the thoroughfare as she heard a familiar voice. Adolin hiked down the street, led by the messenger girl, who pointed him toward Shallan. Finally. The messenger girl bowed, then scampered off back toward the command post. Adolin stepped over and ran his hand through his mop of hair, blonde and black. It looked fantastic, despite his ripped uniform and scraped face. Perhaps that was the advantage to persistently messy hair. He managed to make it go with anything, though she had no idea how he'd gotten so much dust on his uniform. Had he fought a bag of sand? She pulled him against her in the mouth of the alleyway, then twisted and put his arm around her shoulders. Where did you get off to?
Father asked me to check on each of the Thalen shardbearers and report. I left you a palanquin.
Thank you, she said. I've been surveying the aftermath of the fight. I think we did a good job. Only half the city destroyed, which is quite the step up from our work in Kulinar. If we keep this up, some people might actually live through the end of the world. He grunted.
You seem in higher spirits than earlier.
Teshev fed me tea, she said. I'll probably be bouncing off the clouds soon. Don't get me laughing. I sound like an axhound puppy when I'm hyper.
Shallan, he said.
She twisted up to look at his eyes, then followed his gaze. Above, Kaladin rose into the air to inspect something that they couldn't see. I didn't mean to abandon you earlier, Shallan said. I'm sorry. I should never have let you run off.
He took a deep breath, then removed his arm from her shoulders.
I've screwed it up, Shallan thought immediately. Stormfather, I've gone and ruined it.
I've decided, Adolin said, to step back.
Adolin, I didn't mean to...
I have to say this, Shallan. Please.
He stood up tall, stiff.
I'm going to let him have you.
She blinked. Let him have me.
I'm holding you back, Adolin said. I see the way you two look at each other. I don't want you to keep forcing yourself to spend time with me because you feel sorry for me.
Storms. Now he's trying to ruin it. No, Shallan said. First off, you don't get to treat me like some kind of prize. You don't decide who gets me.
I'm not trying to...
He took another deep breath.
Look, this is hard for me, Shallan. I'm trying to do the right thing. Don't make it harder.
I don't get a choice?
You've made your choice. I see how you look at him.
I'm an artist, Adolin. I appreciate a nice picture when I see one. Doesn't mean I want to pull it off the hook and go get intimate.
Kaladin landed on a roof in the distance, still looking the other way. Adolin waved toward him.
Shallan! He can literally fly!
Oh? And is that what women are supposed to seek in a mate? Is it in the Polite Lady's Handbook to Courtship and Family? The Beckena edition, maybe? Ladies, you can't possibly marry a man if he can't fly. Never mind if the other option is as handsome as Sin, kind to everyone he meets regardless of their station, passionate about his art, and genuinely humble in the weirdest, most confident way. Never mind if he actually seems to get you and remarkably listens to your problems, encouraging you to be you, not to hide yourself away. Never mind if being near him makes you want to rip his shirt off and push him into the nearest alleyway, then kiss him until he can't breathe anymore. If he can't fly, then, well, you just have to call it off.
She paused for breath, gasping.
And, Adolin said, that guy is. Me?
You are such a fool! She grabbed his ripped coat and pulled him into a kiss, passion spren crystallizing in the air around them. The warmth of the kiss did more for her than the tea ever could. It made her bubble and boil inside. Stormlight was nice, but this? This was an energy that made it done by comparison. Storms, she loved this man. When she let him out of the kiss, he grabbed her and pulled her close, breathing heavily.
Are you sure? He asked. I just don't glare at me, Shallan. I have to say this. The world is full of gods and heralds now, and you're one of them. I'm practically a nobody. I'm not used to that feeling.
Then it's probably the best thing that's ever happened to you, Adolin Colin. Well, except for me. She snuggled against him. I will admit to you, in the interest of full honesty, that Vale did have a tendency to fawn over Kaladin Stormblessed. She has terrible taste in men, and I've convinced her to fall in line.
That's worrisome, Shallan.
I won't let her act on it, I promise.
I didn't mean that, Adolin said. I meant you, Shallan, becoming other people.
We're all different people at different times, remember?
Not the same way as you.
I know, she said. But I think I've stopped leaking into new personas. Three for now. She turned around, smiling at him, his hands still around her waist. How do you like that, though? Three betrothed instead of one. Some men drool over the idea of such debauchery. If you want it, I could be practically anyone.
But that's the thing, Shallan. I don't want anyone. I want you.
That might be the hardest one. But I think I can do it, Adolin. With some help, maybe?
He grinned that goofy grin of his.
Storms, how could his hair look so good with gravel in it?
So, he said. You mentioned something about kissing me until I can't breathe. But here I am, not even winded.
He cut off as she kissed him again.
Kaladin settled down on the edge of a roof, high at the top of Thalen City. This poor city. First the Everstorm, and its subsequent returns. The Thalens had only just started figuring out how to rebuild, and now had to deal with more smashed buildings leading up to the corpse of the Thunderclast, which lay like a toppled statue. We can win, he thought, but each victory scars us a little more. In his hand, he rubbed a small stone with his thumb. Down below, in an alleyway off the main thoroughfare, a woman with flowing red hair kissed a man in a ragged and ripped uniform. Some people could celebrate despite the scars. Kaladin accepted that. He merely wished he knew how they did it.
Kaladin?
Syl said. She wove around him as a ribbon of light.
Don't feel bad. The words have to come in their own time. You'll be all right.
I always am. He squinted down at Shallan and Adolin and found that he couldn't be bitter. He didn't feel resignation either. Instead he felt... agreement?
Oh, them, Syl said. Well, I know that you don't back down from fights. You've lost the round, but...
No, he said. Her choice is made. You can see it.
I can?
You should be able to. He rubbed his finger on the rock. I don't think I loved her, Syl. I felt... something. A lightening of my burdens when I was near her. She reminds me of someone.
Who?
He opened his palm and she landed on it, forming into the shape of a young woman with flowing hair and dress. She bent down, inspecting the rock in his palm, cooing over it. Syl could still be shockingly innocent, wide-eyed and excited about the world.
That's a nice rock, she said,
completely serious. Thank you.
Where did you get it?
I found it on the battlefield below. If you get it wet, it changes colors. It looks brown, but with a little water you can see the white, black, and gray.
Ooh!
He let her inspect it for a moment more. It's true, then, he finally said, about the Parshmen? That this was their land, their world, before we arrived? That we were the Void Bringers? She nodded.
Odium is the Void, Kaladin. He draws in emotion and doesn't let it go. You brought him with you. I wasn't alive then, but I know this truth. He was your first god, before you turned to honor.
Kaladin exhaled slowly, closing his eyes. The men of Bridge Four were having trouble with this idea, as well they should. Others in the military didn't care, but his men, they knew. You could protect your home, you could kill to defend the people inside. But what if you'd stolen that house in the first place? What if the people you killed were only trying to get back what was rightfully theirs? Reports from Alethkar said that the Parshmen armies were pushing north, that Alethi armies in the area had moved into Herdaz. What would happen to Hearthstone, his family? Surely in the face of the invasion, he could convince his father to move to Yur-Athiru. But what then? It got so complicated. Humans had lived upon this land for thousands of years. Could anyone really be expected to let go because of what ancient people had done, no matter how dishonorable their actions? Who did he fight? Who did he protect? Defender? Invader? Honorable knight? Hired thug? The Recreants, he said to Syl. I always imagined it as a single event. A day the knights all gave up their shards like in Dalinar's vision. But I don't think it actually happened like that.
Then how? Syl asked.
Like this, Kaladin said. He squinted, watching the light of a setting sun play on the ocean. They found out something they couldn't ignore. Eventually, they had to face it.
They made the wrong choice.
Kaladin pocketed the stone. The oaths are about perception, Syl. You confirmed that. The only thing that matters is whether or not we are confident that we're obeying our principles. If we lose that confidence, then dropping the armor and weapons is only a formality.
Cal,
I'm not going to do the same, he said. I'd like to think that the past of Bridge Four will make us a little more pragmatic than those ancient Radiants. We won't abandon you. But finding out what we will do might end up being messy. Kaladin stepped off the building, then lashed himself so he soared in a wide arc over the city. He landed on a rooftop where most of Bridge Four was sharing a meal of flatbread with Kuma, crushed lavas and spices. They could have demanded something far better than travel rations, but they didn't seem to realize it. Teft stood apart, glowing softly. Kaladin waved to the other men, then walked up to join Teft at the edge of the rooftop, staring out over the ocean beyond.
Almost time to get the men back to work, Teft noted. King Taravangian wants us to fly wounded up from the Trios stations to the Oathgate. The men wanted a break for food, not that this storming did much. You'd already won this battle when we got here, Cal.
I'd be dead if you hadn't activated the Oathgate, Kaladin said softly. Somehow I knew that you would, Teft. I knew you'd come for me.
Knew better than I did, then.
Teft heaved a breath. Kaladin rested his hand on Teft's shoulder.
I know how it feels.
Aye,
Teft said.
I suppose you do. But isn't it supposed to feel better? The longing for my moss is still storming there.
It doesn't change us, Teft. We're still who we are.
nation.
Kaladin looked back at the others. Lopin was currently trying to impress Lynn and Lauren with a story about how he lost his arm. It was the 7th rendition Kaladin had heard, each a little different. Beard, Kaladin thought, feeling the loss like a stab to his side. He and Lopin would have gotten along well.
It doesn't get easier, Teft, he said. It gets harder, I think, the more you learn about the words. Fortunately, you do get help. You were mine when I needed it. I'll be yours.
Teft nodded, but then pointed.
What about him?
For the first time, Kaladin realized that Rock wasn't with the rest of the team. The large horn-eater was sitting, stormlight extinguished, on the steps of one of the temples down below. Shardbow across his lap, head bowed. He obviously considered what he'd done to be an oath broken, despite it having saved Kaladin's life.
We lift the bridge together, Teft, Kaladin said, and we carry it.
Dalinar refused to leave Thalen City immediately, but in compromise with Navani, he agreed to return to his villa in the royal ward and rest. On his way, he stopped in the temple of Telenalot, which had been cleared of people to make space for the generals to meet. Those hadn't arrived yet, so he had a short time to himself, looking at the reliefs dedicated to the herald. He knew that he should go up and sleep, at least until the Aesish ambassador arrived, but something about those images of Telenalot Elin, standing tall against overwhelming forces.
Did he ever have to fight humans in one of these last stands? Dalinar thought. Worse, did he ever wonder about what he had done, what we all had done in taking this world?
Dalinar was still standing there when a frail figure darkened the doorway to the temple.
I brought my surgeons, Terabangian said, voice echoing in the large stone chamber. They have already begun helping with the city's wounded.
Thank you, Dalinar said.
Terabangian didn't enter. He stood, waiting until Dalinar sighed softly.
You abandoned me, he said. You abandoned this city.
I assumed that you were going to fall,
Terabangian said,
and so positioned myself in a way that I could seize control of the coalition.
Dalinar started. He turned toward the old man who stood silhouetted in the doorway.
You what?
I assumed that the only way for the coalition to recover from your mistakes was for me to take command. I could not stand with you, my friend. For the good of Roshar, I stepped away.
Even after their discussions together, even knowing how Terabangian viewed his obligations, Dalinar was shocked. This was brutal, utilitarian politics. Terabangian finally stepped into the chamber, trailing a wizened hand along one of the wall reliefs. He joined Dalinar, and together they studied a carving of a powerful man standing tall between two pillars of stone, barring the way between monsters and men.
You didn't become King of Yarkoved by accident, did you?
Dalinar asked. Terabangian shook his head. It seemed obvious to Dalinar now. Terabangian was easy to dismiss when you assumed he was slow of thought. But once you knew the truth, other mysteries began to fit into place.
How? Dalinar asked.
There's a woman at Carbranth, he said. She goes by the name of Dova, but we think she is Bata Elin, a herald. She told us the desolation was approaching.
He looked to Dalinar.
I had nothing to do with the death of your brother. But once I heard of what incredible things the assassin did, I sought him out. Years later, I located him and gave him specific instructions.
Moash stepped down out of the Kolinar Palace into the shadows of a night that had seemed far too long in coming. People clogged the palace gardens, humans who had been cast out of homes to make way for parchmen. Some of these refugees had strung tarps between benches of shale bark, creating very low tents, only a couple of feet tall. Lifespren bobbed among them and the garden plants. Moash's target was a particular man who sat giggling in the darkness near the back of the gardens. A madman with eye color lost to the night.
"Have you seen me?"
the man asked as Moash knelt. "No," Moash said, then rammed the strange golden knife into the man's stomach. The man took it with a quiet grunt, smiled a silly smile, then closed his eyes.
"Were you really one of them?"
Moash asked.
"Herald of the Almighty?"
Was.
The man started to tremble violently, his eyes opening wide.
"Was. No. No. What is this death? What is this death?"
Huddled forms stirred, and some of the wiser ones scuttled away.
"It's taking me,"
the man screamed, then looked down at the knife in Moash's hand.
"What is that?"
The man trembled for a moment more, then jerked once, going motionless. When Moash pulled the yellow-white knife free, it trailed dark smoke and left a blackened wound. The large sapphire at the pommel took on a subdued glow. Moash glanced over his shoulder toward the fused hanging in the night sky behind the palace. This murder seemed a thing that they dared not do themselves. Why? What did they fear? Moash held the knife aloft toward them, but there were no cheers. Nothing accompanied the act but a few muttered words from people trying to sleep. These broken slaves were the only other witnesses to this moment. The final death of Yezrian. Yezir. Yezereza Elin, king of heralds. A figure known in myth and lore as the greatest human who had ever lived. Lopin leaped behind a rock, then grinned, spotting the little spren in the shape of a leaf tucked there.
"Found you, knocko!"
Rua transformed into the shape of a petulant young boy, maybe 9 or 10 years old. Rua was his name, but Nako was, of course, what Lopin called him. Rua zipped into the air as a ribbon of light. Bridge 4 stood near some tents at the bottom of Thalen City in the low ward right in the shadow of the walls. Here, a massive surgeon's station was caring for the wounded.
"Lopin!" Teft called. "Stop being crazy and get over here to help!" "I'm not crazy!" Lopin yelled back. "Sure, I'm the least crazy of this whole lot, and you all know it."
Teft sighed, then waved to Pete and Layton. Together, they carefully lashed a large platform, easily 20 feet square, into the air. It was filled with recuperating wounded. The three bridgemen flew with it toward the upper part of the city. Rua zipped onto Lopin's shoulder and formed into the shape of a young man, then thrust a hand toward the bridgeman and tried the gesture that Lopin had taught him.
"Nice," Lopin said, "but wrong finger." "Nope, not that one either. Nako, that's your foot."
The spren turned the gesture toward Lopin.
"That's it," Lopin said. "You can thank me, Nako, for inspiring this great advance in your learning. People, and little things made out of nothing too, sure, are often inspired near the Lopin."
He turned and strolled into a tent of wounded, the far wall of which was tied right onto a nice, shiny bronze portion of wall. Lopin hoped the Thalens would appreciate how nice it was. Who had a metal wall? Lopin would place one on his palace when he built it. Thalens were strange, though. What else could you say about a people who liked it so far south in the cold? The local language was practically chattering teeth. This tent of wounded was filled with the people who had been deemed too healthy to deserve Renarin's or Lift's healing, but still needed a surgeon's care. They weren't dying, sure, right now. Maybe later.
But everyone was dying maybe later, so it was probably all right to ignore them for someone whose guts got misplaced. The moans and whimpers indicated that they found not dying immediately to be a small comfort. The Ardens did what they could, but most of the real surgeons were set up higher in the city. Taravangian's forces had finally decided to join the battle, now that all the easy stuff, like dying, which really didn't take much skill at all, was through. Lopin fetched his pack, then passed Drew, who was folding freshly boiled bandages. Even after all these centuries, sure they did what the heralds had told them. Boiling stuff killed Rotspren. Lopin patted Drew on the shoulder. The slender Alethi man looked up and nodded toward Lopin, showing reddened eyes. Loving a soldier was not easy, and now that Kaladin had returned from Alethkar alone... Lopin moved on, and eventually settled down beside a wounded man in a cot. Thalen, with drooping eyebrows and a bandage around his head. He stared straight ahead, not blinking.
"Wanna see a trick?"
Lopin asked the soldier. The man shrugged. Lopin lifted his foot up and put the boot on the man's cot. The laces had come undone, and Lopin, one hand behind his back, deftly grabbed the strings and looped them around his hand, twisted them, then pulled them tight, using his other foot to hold one end. He wound up with an excellent knot with a nice bow. It was even symmetrical. Maybe he could get an Arden to write a poem about it. The soldier gave no reaction. Lopin settled back, pulling over his pack, which clinked softly.
"Don't look like that. It's not the end of the world."
The soldier cocked his head.
"Well, sure, technically it might be. But for the end of the world, it's not so bad, right? I figured that when everything ended, we'd sink into a noxious bath of pus and doom, breathing in agony as the air around us, sure, became molten and we screamed a final burning scream, relishing the memories of the last time a woman loved us."
Lopin tapped the man's cot.
"Don't know about you, Mooley, but my lungs aren't burning. The air doesn't seem very molten. Considering how bad this could have gone, you've got a lot to be thankful for. Remember that."
"I..." The man blinked.
"I meant remember those exact words. That's the phrase to tell the woman you're seeing. Helps a ton."
He fished in his pack and pulled out a bottle of Thalen Lavis beer he'd salvaged. Rua stopped zipping around the top of the tent long enough to float down and inspect it.
"Wanna see a trick?"
Lopin asked.
Another?
The man asked.
"Normally, I'd pop the cap off with one of my fingernails. I have great Herdazian ones, extra hard. You have weaker ones like most people. So here's the trick."
Lopin rolled up his trouser leg with one hand. He pressed the bottle top first to his leg and then, with a quick flick, twisted off the cap. He raised the bottle toward the man. The man reached for it with the bandaged stump of his right arm, which ended above the elbow. He looked at it, grimaced, then reached with the left hand instead.
"If you need any jokes," Lopin said, "I've got a few I can't use anymore."
The soldier drank quietly, eyes flicking to the front of the tent where Kaladin had entered, glowing softly, speaking with some of the surgeons. Knowing Kaladin, he was probably telling them how to do their jobs.
"You're one of them," the soldier said. "Radiant."
"Sure," Lopin said. "But not really one of them. I'm trying to figure out the next step."
"Next step?"
"I've got the flying," Lopin said, "and the spren. But I don't know if I'm good at saving people yet."
The man looked at his drink.
"I think you might be doing just fine."
"That's a beer, not a person. Don't get those mixed up. Very embarrassing, but I won't tell."
"How?"
the man said.
"How does one join up? They say it heals you."
"Sure, it heals everything except what's in the rock bud on the end of your neck. Which is great for me. I'm the only sane one in this group. That might be a problem."
"Why?"
They say you have to be broken,
Lopin said, glancing toward his spren, who made a few loops of excitement, then shot off to hide again. Lopin would need to go looking for the little guy. He did enjoy the game.
You know that tall woman, the king's sister? The Chortana with the glare that could break a shard blade? She says that the power has to get into your soul somehow. So I've been trying to cry a lot and moan about my life being so terrible, but I think the Stormfather knows I'm lying. Hard to act sad when you're the Lopin.
I might be broken, the man said softly.
Good, good. We don't have a Thalen yet, and lately it looks like we're trying to collect one of everything. We even have a Parshman.
I just ask, the man said, then took a drink.
Sure, ask, follow us around, worked for Lynn, but you have to say the words.
Words?
Life before death, strength before weakness, journey before pancakes. That's the easy one. The hard one is, I will protect those who cannot protect themselves, and...
A sudden flash of coldness struck Lopin, and the gemstones in the room flickered, then went out. A symbol crystallized in frost on the stones around Lopin, vanishing under the cots. The ancient symbol of the Windrunners.
What?
Lopin stood up.
What? Now?
He heard a far-off rumbling like thunder.
Now?
Lopin said, shaking a fist at the sky.
I was saving that for a dramatic moment, you Penhito. Why didn't you listen earlier? We were sure all about to die and things.
He got a distinct, very distant impression.
You weren't quite ready.
Storm you!
Lopin made a double obscene gesture toward the sky, something he'd been waiting a long time to use properly for the first time. Rua joined him, making the same gesture, then grew two extra arms to give it more weight.
Nice, Lopin said. Hey, Goncho! I'm a full night radiant now, so you can start complimenting me.
Kaladin didn't seem to have even noticed.
Just a moment,
Lopin said to the one-armed soldier, then stalked over to where Kaladin was speaking with a runner.
You're sure? Kaladin said to the scribe. Does Delinar know about this?
He sent me, sir, the woman said. Here's a map with the location this Banreed listed.
Goncho,
Lopin said.
Hey, did you...
Congratulations, Lopin, good job. You're second in command after Teft until I return.
Kaladin burst from the tent and lashed himself to the sky, streaking away, the tent's front flaps rustling in the wind of his passing. Lopin put his hands on his hips. Rua landed on his head, then made a little squeal of angry delight while proffering toward Kaladin a double rude gesture.
Don't wear it out, Nocco, Lopin said.
Come on, Ash said, holding Taln's hand, pulling him up the last few steps. He stared at her dully. Taln, she whispered. Please. The last glimmers of his lucidity had faded. Once, nothing would have kept him from the battlefield when other men died. Today, he had hidden and whimpered during the fighting. Now he followed her like a simpleton. Talanel Ilin had broken like the rest of them. Ishar, she thought. Ishar will know what to do. She fought down the tears. Watching him fade had been like watching the sun go out. All these years she'd hoped that maybe... What? That he'd be able to redeem them? Someone nearby cursed by her name and she wanted to slap him. Don't swear by us. Don't paint pictures of us. Don't worship at our statues. She'd stamp it all out. She would ruin every depiction. She... Ash breathed in and out, then pulled Taln by the hand again, getting him into line with the other refugees fleeing the city. Only foreigners were allowed out right now, to prevent the Oathgate from being overworked. She'd get back to Aesir, where their skin tones wouldn't stand out. What a gift you gave them, he'd said. Time to recover for once between desolations. Time to progress.
Oh, Tom. Couldn't he have just hated her? Couldn't he have let her? Ash stopped in place as something ripped inside of her. Oh, God. Oh, Adonalsium. What was that? What was that? Tarn whimpered and collapsed, a puppet with cut strings. Ash stumbled, then sank to her knees. She wrapped her arms around herself, trembling. It wasn't pain. It was something far, far worse. A loss. A hole inside of her. A piece of her soul being excised.
Miss? A soldier asked, jogging up. Miss, are you all right? Hey, someone get one of the healers. Miss, what's wrong?
They killed him somehow.
Who?
She looked up at the man, tears blurring her vision. This wasn't like their other deaths. This was something horrible. She couldn't feel him at all. They'd done something to Jezrian's soul. My father, she said, is dead. They caused a stir in the refugees, and someone detached themselves from the group of scribes up ahead. A woman in deep violet, the Blackthorn's niece. She looked at Ash, then at Tarn, then at a piece of paper she'd been carrying. It contained shockingly accurate sketches of the two of them. Not as they were presented in iconography, but real sketches. Who? Why? That's his drawing style, a part of Ash noted. Why has Midias been giving away pictures of us? The ripping sensation finally ended, so abruptly that, for the first time in thousands of years, Ash fell unconscious.
122. A Debt Repaid. Yes, I began my journey alone, and I ended it alone. But that does not mean that I walked alone. From the Way of Kings, Postscript. Kaladin flew across the churning ocean. Dalinar had been able to summon the strength to overcharge him with Stormlight, though it was obviously exhausting to do so. Kaladin had used up that charge getting to Carbranth, where he'd stopped for a night's sleep. Even Stormlight could only push the body so far. After a long flight the next day, he'd reached the Tarat Sea. He flew now using gemstones requisitioned from the royal treasury in Carbranth. Smoke rose from several places along the coast of Alethkar, where cities still resisted the Parshman invasion. Kaladin's map fluttered in his fingers, and he watched the coast for the rock formation the scribe had sketched for him. By the time he spotted it, he worried he wouldn't have enough Stormlight left to make it back to safety. He dropped there and continued on foot, per the instructions, crossing a cold and rocky land that reminded him of the Shattered Plains. Along a dried-out river, he found a little group of refugees huddled by a cavern in the stone. A very small fire laced the air with smoke and lit 10 people in brown cloaks. Nondescript, like many others he'd passed during his search. The only distinctive feature was a small symbol they'd painted on an old tarp pinned up between two poles at the front of the camp. The symbol of Bridge 4. Two of the figures rose from the fire, pulling back hoods. Two men. One tall and lanky, the other short and scrappy, silver-haired at the temples. Drahi and Scar. They gave Kaladin a pair of sharp salutes. Drahi had old cuts on his face and Scar looked like he hadn't slept in weeks. They'd had to cover their foreheads in ash to hide their tattoos, an act that wouldn't have worked in simpler times. It basically marked them as runaway slaves. Syl let out a laugh of pure delight, zipping over to them, and from the way they reacted it seemed she'd let them see her. Behind them, Shallan's three servants emerged from their cloaks. Kaladin didn't know the other people, but one of them would be the merchant they'd found, a man who still possessed a span reed.
"Cal," Scar said as Kaladin slapped him on the back. "There's something we didn't mention by span reed."
Kaladin frowned as Drahi returned to the fire and picked up one of the figures there. A child? In rags. Yes, a frightened little boy, maybe 3 or 4 years old, lips chapped, eyes haunted. Elakar's son. We protect those, Drahi said, who cannot protect themselves. Teravangian was unable to solve the first page of the day's puzzles. Dukar, the Storm Warden, took the paper and looked it over. He shook his head. Stupid today. Teravangian rested back against his seat in Urethiru. He seemed to be stupid more and more often. Perhaps it was his perception. 8 days had passed since the Battle of Thalen Field. He wasn't certain Dalinar would ever trust him again, but giving him some truth had been a calculated risk. For now, Teravangian was still part of the Coalition. It was good, even if... it... storms. Trying to think through the fuzz in his brain was... bothersome. He is weak of mind today, Dukar announced to Maral, Teravangian's thick-armed bodyguard. He can interact, but should not make important policy decisions. We cannot trust his interpretation of the diagram. Vargo? Adratagia asked. How would you like to spend the day? In the Vaden Gardens, perhaps? Teravangian opened his eyes and looked to his faithful friends, Dukar and Maral. Adratagia, who looked so old now. Did she feel as he did, shocked every time she looked in the mirror, wondering where the days had gone? When they'd been young, they'd wanted to conquer the world. Or save it. Your Majesty? Adratagia asked. Oh, right. His mind did wander sometimes. We cannot do anything until the Everstorm passes, correct? Adratagia nodded, proffering her calculations. It is nearly here. People had spent the 8 days since the battle, vainly hoping that the Everstorm had blown itself out for good. It's not as strong as it was during its previous cycle, but it is coming. It has already reached Aesir, and should hit Urethiru within the hour.
Then, let us wait.
Adratagia gave him a few letters that had come from his grandchildren in Carbranth. He could read, even when he was stupid, though it took him longer to make out some of the words. Gavori had been accepted to study at the School of Storms, which had legacy access to the Palinaeum for all scholars. Caravaniga, the middle granddaughter, had been accepted for wardship and had sketched him a picture of the three of them. Little Ruli grinned a gap-toothed smile in the center. She had drawn him a picture of flowers. Teravangian touched the tears on his cheek as he finished reading. None of the three knew anything of the diagram, and he was determined to keep it that way. Adratagia and Dukar conversed quietly in the corner of the room, confused by portions of the diagram. They ignored Mabon, the room servant, who felt Teravangian's forehead as he'd been coughing lately.
What fools we can be, Teravangian said, resting fingers on the picture of flowers. We never know as much as we think. Perhaps in that, the smart me has always been the more stupid one.
He knew the Everstorm's arrival only by a ding from Adratagia's clock, a magnificently small piece gifted by Navani Colin.
The diagram has been wrong too often, Maral said to Adratagia and Dukar. It predicted Dalinar Colin would fall, if pressured, and become the enemy's champion.
Perhaps Graves was right, Dukar said, rubbing his hands together nervously. He glanced toward the window, shuddered despite the fact that the Everstorm didn't reach this high.
The Blackthorn could have been made an ally. This is what the diagram meant.
No,
Teravangian said.
That is not what it meant.
They looked to him.
Vargo?
Adratagia asked. He tried to find the argument to explain himself, but it was like trying to hold a cupful of oil in his fist.
We're in a dangerous position, Dukar said. His Majesty revealed too much to Dalinar.
We will be watched now.
The window.
Dalinar doesn't know of the diagram, Adratagia countered, or that we brought the singers to Eurythiru. He only knows that Carbranth controlled the assassin and thinks that the herald's insanity prompted us. We're still well positioned.
Open the window.
None of the others heard the voice.
The diagram is growing too flawed, Maral insisted.
Though he was no scholar, he was a full participant in their scheme.
We've deviated too much from its promises. Our plans need to change.
It's too late, Adratagia said. The confrontation will happen soon.
Open it.
Taravangian rose from his seat, trembling. Adratagia was right. The confrontation predicted by the diagram would happen soon. Sooner, even, than she thought.
We must trust in the diagram,
Taravangian whispered as he passed by them.
We must trust the version of myself that knew what to do. We must have faith.
Adratagia shook her head. She didn't like it when any of them used words like faith. He tried to remember that, and did remember it when he was smart.
Storms take you, Night Watcher, he thought. Odium's victory will kill you, too. Couldn't you have just gifted me and not cursed me?
He'd asked for the capacity to save his people. He'd begged for compassion and acumen. And he'd gotten them. Just never at the same time. He touched the window shutters.
Vargo? Adratagia asked. Letting in fresh air?
No. Unfortunately, something else.
He opened the shutters, and was suddenly in a place of infinite light. The ground beneath him glowed, and nearby rivers flowed past, made of something molten, colored gold and orange. Odium appeared to Taravangian as a 20-foot-tall human with shin eyes and a scepter. His beard was not wispy like Taravangian's had been, but neither was it bushy. It almost looked like an Ardent's beard.
Now, Odium said. Taravangian, is it?
He squinted as if seeing Taravangian for the first time.
Little man, why did you write to us? Why did you have your surge binder unlock the Oath Gate and allow our armies to attack Eurythiru?
I wish only to serve you, great god,
Taravangian said, getting down onto his knees.
Do not prostrate yourself, the god said, laughing. I can see that you are no sycophant, and I will not be fooled by your attempts to seem one.
Taravangian drew in a deep breath, but remained on his knees. Today, of all days, Odium finally contacted him in person?
I am not well today, great god. I am frail, and of ill health. Might I meet with you again, when I am well?
Poor man, Odium said.
A chair sprouted from the golden ground behind Taravangian, and Odium stepped over to him, suddenly smaller, more human-sized. He gently pushed Taravangian up and into the chair.
There. Isn't that better?
Yes. Thank you.
Taravangian scrunched up his brow. This was not how he'd imagined this conversation.
Now,
Odium said, lightly resting his scepter on Taravangian's shoulder.
Do you think I will ever meet with you when you are feeling well? Do you not realize that I chose this day specifically because of your ailment, Taravangian? Do you really think you will ever be able to negotiate with me from a position of power?
Taravangian licked his lips.
No.
Good. Good. We understand one another. Now, what is it you have been doing?
He stepped to the side, and a golden pedestal appeared with a book on top of it. The diagram. Odium began leafing through it, and the golden landscape changed, shifting to a bedroom with fine wooden furniture. Taravangian recognized it from the scribbled writing on every surface, from floor to ceiling to the headboard of the bed.
"Taravangian," Odium said. "This is remarkable."
The walls and furniture faded, leaving behind the words which hung in the air and started glowing with a golden light.
"You did this without access to fortune or the spiritual realm? Truly incredible."
Thank you.
Allow me to show you how far I see."
Golden words exploded outward from the ones Taravangian had written in the diagram. Millions upon millions of golden letters burned into the air, extending into infinity. Each took one small element that Taravangian had written and expanded upon it in volumes and volumes worth of information. Taravangian gasped as, for a moment, he saw into eternity. Odium inspected words that Taravangian had once written on the side of a dresser.
"I see. Take over Alethkar. Bold plan, bold plan. But why invite me to attack Urethiru?"
"We..."
"No need.
I see.
Give up Thalen City to ensure that the Blackthorn fell, removing your opposition. An overture toward me, which worked, obviously."
Odium turned to him and smiled, a knowing, confident smile.
"Do you really think you will ever be able to negotiate with me from a position of power?"
All that writing loomed over Taravangian, blocking off the landscape with millions of words. A smarter him would have tried to read it, but this dumber version was simply intimidated. And could that be for his good? Reading that would consume him, lose him.
"My grandchildren,"
he thought.
"The people of Carbranth, the good people of the world."
He trembled to think of what might happen to them all. Somebody had to make the difficult decisions. He slipped off his golden seat as Odium studied another portion of the diagram. There, behind where the bed had stood, a section of words that had faded from golden to black. What was that? As he drew near, Taravangian saw that the words were blacked out into eternity starting from this point on his wall, as if something had happened here, a ripple in what Odium could see. At its root, a name, Ranaran Kolin.
"Dalinar was not supposed to ascend," Odium said, stepping up behind Taravangian.
"You need me,"
Taravangian whispered.
"I need nobody."
Taravangian looked up, and there, glowing in front of him, was a set of words, a message from himself in the past. Incredible. Had he somehow seen even this?
"Thank you."
He read them out loud.
"You have agreed to a battle of champions. You must withdraw to prevent this contest from occurring, and so must not meet with Dalinar Kolin again. Otherwise he can force you to fight. This means you must let your agents do your work. You need me."
Odium stepped up, noting the words that Taravangian had read. Then he frowned at the tears on Taravangian's cheeks.
"Your passion," Odium said, "does you credit. What is it you ask in barter?"
"Protect the people I rule."
"Dear Taravangian, do you not think I can see what you are planning?"
Odium gestured toward writing where the ceiling had once stood.
"You would seek to become king of all humans, and then I would need to preserve them all. No. If you help me, I will save your family, anyone within 2 generations of you."
"Not enough,"
Then we have no deal.
The words started to fade all around them, leaving him alone. Alone and stupid. He blinked tears from the corners of his eyes.
Carbranth, he said. Preserve only Carbranth. You may destroy all other nations. Just leave my city. It is what I beg of you.
The world was lost. Humankind doomed. They had planned to protect so much more. But he saw now how little they knew. One city before the storms, one land protected even if the rest had to be sacrificed.
Carbranth, Odium said. The city itself and any humans who have been born into it along with their spouses. This is whom I will spare. Do you agree to this?
Should we write a contract?
Our word is the contract. I am not some spren of honor who seeks to obey only the strictest letter of a promise. If you have an agreement from me, I will keep it in spirit, not merely in word.
What else could he do?
I will take this deal,
Terabangian whispered.
The diagram will serve you in exchange for the preservation of my people. But I warn you, the assassin has joined Dalinar Kholin. I was forced to reveal my association with him.
I know, Odium said. You are still of use. First, I will require that honor blade which you have so cleverly stolen. And then you will find out for me what the Alethi have discovered about this tower.
Shallan breathed out stormlight, shaping an illusion possible only when she and Dalinar met. Spinning curls of mist swept out to form oceans and peaks, the entire continent of Roshar, a mass of vibrant colors. High princes Aladar and Hatham waved for their generals and scribes to walk around the map,